Welcome to Extra Time, a conversation with the national newspaper staff writers and editors on UAE and international sports. It is Wednesday, December the 11th. I'm Chitrabhanu Kadlail for the national.ae. Nelson Mandela, South Africa's first democratically elected black president, passed away on Thursday, December the 5th, at the age of 95. Over the years, much has been said, written, and recorded about his role as an anti-apartheid activist, politician, head of state, humanitarian, and philanthropist. But given that this is a sports podcast, we'll be discussing how Mandela used fun and games for a higher purpose, which is to build a nation that was racially divided for several decades. And to give me insight on the subject is Richard Ferraris. Richard is the National's assistant foreign editor, who was a sports journalist for several years in his native South Africa before he moved to the UAE 3 years ago. Welcome to this podcast, Rich.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers. Rich, you were obviously very young, as I was, when we watched on our TV sets as Nelson Mandela walked out of prison in 1990. But obviously you'd heard about him and known about him a long time before that. Being from the white minority community in South Africa, what was the perception people had of Mandela and, of course, apartheid, you know, back then? What did people around you tell you about him? You know, did you grow up admiring the man?
I grew up in a fairly conservative town. And I was only 7 years old when Mandela was released from jail. And my early recollections, unfortunately, aren't all that positive. He was often spoken of in the pejorative as a terrorist and a communist and worse. But when he came out of jail, he soon looked, well, he looked presidential as soon as he was released. And It was a confusing time because I'd heard bad things about him, but everything that I saw about him seemed so wonderful and so great, you know, the Mandela that we remember today. So it was a journey. You know, we my generation, when we were going to school for the first time, black children were starting to appear at schools. And, you know, we knew that Mandela had been released, and while we were maybe too young to understand how momentous this was, it all seemed quite natural to us. So there was a lot of progress from the white community seeing him in, as you say, as something of an evil man. He soon won us all over, and it became quite natural to be with black people and to feel comfortable, and that's, I suppose, that was the birth of the new South Africa right there.
Right. It's interesting you mentioned the fact that he won you over. He was sworn in as president in 1994. And then in 1995, South Africa was hosting the Rugby World Cup, and the Springboks, your rugby union team, they were participating in the tournament, of course. And having, you know, a team made up majority of white people and Afghan people, not a lot of black people followed the team. In fact, they were against the team. But Nelson Mandela struck a different chord with the team, didn't he?
Well, the rugby was always seen by the black majority as the sport of the oppressor. But Nelson Mandela was shrewd enough to know, and the ANC too, they were shrewd enough to know how much the World Cup tournament meant, not only to South Africa as an opportunity to build a nation, but it was also important for them to showcase the country to the rest of the world, to show the world that a black government can successfully host a major tournament. And the success led to more success. It led to us hosting the Africa Cup of Nations football, which South Africa won in 1996. We hosted the Cricket World Cup, and of course, most notably, the 2010 FIFA World Cup.
That's right. Yeah, but staying with the Rugby World Cup, was there an evident change of heart, at least from the black people's perspective, after South Africa won the World Cup memorably? And, you know, this is great picture we all have seen of Nelson Mandela shaking hands with PNR and you know, handing him the trophy. Did that visual or did that sentiment really change the way race relations panned out in the country?
Well, the significance or the beauty of that moment was that it reached out to both sides of the divide. He showed the black majority that black people can embrace a sport that was once indelibly associated with apartheid,
mm-hmm.
while for whites, it showed them that Mandela understood them, understood what they were all about, understood that their identity wasn't going to come under attack in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of uncertainty at that point. It was a young nation still trying to find its feet. But again, Mandela was a very, very smart man, and he knew the power of sport in 1991.
Mm.
We've discussed this before. He visited New York.
Right.
And he won over the crowd there by saying to them, "I am a Yankee. I am a New York Yankee," and put on a New York Yankees cap.
Right.
And that created a real buzz in the city.
Right.
So this wasn't something that he stumbled upon overnight.
Mm.
It was a carefully honed political program, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that was designed to bring the people together. And I think history shows that it worked.
Right. It's interesting you make this point about having brought so many of these tournaments in the country. Do you think there was a direct impact, say Mandela bidding for these rights personally, to bring these tournaments to the country? Or was it just the result of South Africa having finally been accepted by the international community, and it was just a matter of time that they were going to host these tournaments anyway?
I think the two are linked again.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that we love to talk about in South Africa. We call it Madiba magic,
mm-hmm.
Mandela magic,
mm-hmm.
because he was such a charismatic individual. As we've discussed, he could pull people together. He could rally people around a cause. And certainly having him endorse the World Cup bid, the FIFA World Cup bid,
mm-hmm.
I think certainly won South Africa some favor.
Right.
Yeah.
2006, I think, was when Germany won the bidding rights. And
mm-hmm.
there was some controversy about it because there was a FIFA executive official who abstained.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people said that if Nelson Mandela hadn't, you know, had personally intervened, South Africa would have ended up hosting it in 2006 instead of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think there's substance to all that?
I think there might have been, but you could also argue perhaps that South Africa wasn't ready in 2006 to host something of that magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember being very, very angry. I actually remember my brother kicking over a coffee table at home when we lost the bid because we were really confident.
Right.
And this feeling of frustration was evident across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that was telling, because that showed that you've now got a people and a country
mm-hmm.
who are expecting a level of success.
Right.
Maybe taking some of it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so great if you go back to 1995,
mm-hmm.
when there was all this uncertainty about, can we host the World Cup, the Rugby World Cup?
Mm-hmm.
Can our rugby team do a reasonable job at the World Cup?
Mm-hmm.
There was maybe even a sense of impending embarrassment or doom.
Right.
So to go from that to being angry about not winning a World Cup, but that we thought we almost had a right to host,
mm-hmm.
it showed progress in the nation, and eventually we did win the bid,
mm-hmm.
and I think we hosted a very good World Cup in 2010.
How important was it for the country to host all these big events? Because there are a lot of white South Africans who have mentioned that more than the economic sanctions that were imposed on the country during the apartheid regime, it was the fact that they could not engage in sporting activities with other countries, both outside South Africa and inside South Africa, that really hurt people on a nationalistic level. How important was it for you guys to get these tournaments?
Well, I don't think any people likes to be a pariah, and that's exactly what South Africa was during apartheid.
Right.
And I think rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
If there's not going to be any equality before the law and equality in team selection,
mm-hmm.
then questions have to be asked, and the team was banned. That was certainly the right thing to do.
Right.
I don't I don't know if it had a bigger effect than economic sanctions,
mm-hmm.
but there were a lot of factors that came together at the right time. There was the battle within Afrikanerdom.
Right.
F.W. de Klerk, who won the Nobel Peace Prize with Mandela,
mm-hmm.
I think realized that the system was crumbling.
Right.
And you had a lot of other, you know, communism was falling, and there was a lot of upheaval in the world.
Mm.
And the sanctions were really hurting South Africa, and it just reached the point where it had to end. It was no longer sustainable.
Right. One vision that Nelson Mandela always had was to have a post-racial world, obviously, and that he was hoping would reflect in the sports teams. Now, one controversial aspect of sports in South Africa has been quotas.
Mm-hmm.
None of the teams in South Africa have been able to get an ideal mix of white, black, and colored people in their teams.
Mm-hmm.
Long after Chester Williams, memorably played for the Springboks during that 1995 World Cup win, you still grapple with that problem, don't you?
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation.
Mm.
In the past, we've had some cases where black players have been fast-tracked into international teams and have played at a very high level.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them have been talented enough to do that, but you know, sometimes they might get injured. And then because they lack a maturity that comes with experience, they struggle to get back into the teams.
Right.
What we're seeing now, instead of that top-down approach, in the past, maybe there was a lot of pressure to get black players in the Springbok team or black players in the cricket team,
mm-hmm.
the national cricket team.
Right.
Now what we're seeing is a bottom-up approach. We're seeing quotas being introduced into the Vodacom Cup rugby tournament, which is one of the feeder levels it's professional rugby,
right.
But it's I suppose the bottom rung.
Interesting.
A certain number of black players have to be named in the match day squad, and a certain number have to play. And they're doing a similar thing with the domestic cricket franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a far more prudent and reasonable way to go about it, because certainly, you know, while we have a lot of very talented players now playing for our national teams, black players,
mm-hmm.
for both the rugby team and the cricket team, we are seeing some deficiencies. For example, there's no black African batsman,
right.
in the national cricket team.
Mm-hmm.
We've had Makai Ntini, you know, one of our all-time great bowlers,
mm-hmm.
and a few other notable players, but you know, no one has really stood out, and that's something that I think all South Africans would like to see. And you see that if you go to Newlands or if you go to the Wanderers,
mm-hmm.
often, very often, the crowd favorites are players of color. Hashi Mamla, you know,
right.
you see dozens of white guys wearing the Mamla beard.
Sure. Yeah.
Ntini was incredibly popular,
mm-hmm.
when he was playing. Brian Habana for the Springboks,
right.
is also a star in the eyes of South Africans, both black and white.
Finally, Rich, what is your most enduring sporting memory of Nelson Mandela?
Sporting memory? Well, you know what? I'm gonna go back a long, long time. There's a grainy black and white photo of Nelson Mandela, the boxer.
Ah,
yes. He was a very competent boxer in his time.
Right.
And one of the great things about Mandela is he didn't only have a moral gravitas,
mm-hmm.
that few, if any, have had or can ever have, but he was just a magnificent human being. He was tall and he was handsome,
right.
and he was powerful.
Right.
And I think you can see that in this picture,
mm-hmm.
and it's also so symbolic because it was Nelson Mandela, the fighter,
right.
Nelson Mandela, the freedom fighter.
Right. Oh, it's a fascinating discussion, Rich. Thanks for having this chat with us.
Thanks very much.
We'll have to leave it there for now. Richard Ferraris is the National's Assistant Foreign Editor. This episode is edited by Paul Driscoll and produced by the National's Multimedia Desk. I'm Chitra Bhanu Kadlail.